live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful downtown sunny California. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone. Good afternoon. My name is Rob Starr, along with my good friend, Mr. Mike Barron, who I respectively call Mikeypedia, because he is the man who knows it all. And I hope everybody's having a good day. I know Mike's having a good day, right, Mike?
Absolutely. Cool. It's great to be. It's great to be part of the Water Boys team.
I know you're in the remote studio, and you'll be here in a second.
That's true.
Anyway, we have a great day today. I have some good guests, and one of our special guests will be right on after the news portion, but we're going to go to that while we're here. So we'll get a little news going here from the purveyor of Maven's Notebook, Miss Chris Austin. Chris, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Well, I guess I heard it's official. Governor Jerry Brown officially downsizes Delta Tunnel plants.
Oh, wait. Is that true?
That's what I heard. That's what I'm asking.
Actually, the Department of Water Resources would tell you, no, they are not downsizing the project. They are phasing.
That's right. I was just going to go into that. I just wanted to say, but that was. Go ahead.
This is not the no spin zone.
No.
but I mean, we really got to back up though, because this story really started like a week or two ago when a bunch of organizations filed a motion to stop this hearing from continuing, claiming ex parte communications between state water board staff and Department of Water Resources staff. And there was also another argument that said you ought to stop the hearing because we hear rumors that DWR is going to be changing the project. And so we all sat around for a week and what's the state water board going to do? So they put out a ruling on Tuesday, I believe it was, and they said, okay, we decided that the ex parte communications were all allowed. They weren't on controversial subjects. So we're denying all those motions. And since DWR has not officially changed the project, we are still going to continue the hearing.
Right.
And then the next day, that's when DWR announces, "Oh, well, we're sort of changing the project, although we're phasing it,
Well, I was leading into this only because I was going to joke about this is almost like the Nunes letter that we read.
Wait a minute! Betting on sensitive political ground. Make a different analogy.
Well, you know, you hear different things, and everybody says this and that. And that's what I was getting to. But anyway, that's why we have Chris on here to straighten it all out.
Oh, so it's been rather entertaining. So then yesterday, at about 3:30. DWR puts out this memo that says we are phasing construction of this project. And so, of course, everyone goes crazy all over the place. And we're just, I'm like, I want to have a football pool. How soon until the motion gets filed, you know?
Right.
And I would have been in for five, right? But
right.
5:48, I get the email that the motion has been filed to, you know, reconsider now that DWR has indeed changed the project.
I heard that NRDC has opened another lawsuit, or you know, basically said he says what you're doing, DWR, is against state law because you don't have this project fully funded. Have you heard any information about that aspect of this discussion
that did come up this morning at the hearing, and there was he said it hasn't been funded, it's a violation of the Delta Reform Act, and they said we don't interpret that law the same way. And you know, to be realistic, for this one tunnel, they do actually, you know, I mean, they're getting ready to get it funded. So, you know, I'm not sure that is a valid argument. What is a valid argument, I think, or is really going to need to be considered, is a one tunnel, a two intake one tunnel is different than a three intake two tunnel system. I mean, it's going to take less water, and that's going to impact things differently. Maybe in some cases better, maybe in some cases not. So it is a significant change. And the big question is, the environmental impact statement. You know, DWR says we have to recirculate, we're going to do an environmental impact report, even though it's not a major change. And, you know, so the other argument was, if you're doing an environmental impact report, it's a major change, because whoever does one, if they don't have to.
Yeah. That's a very informative summary, Chris, that you've just provided our listeners. I appreciate you bringing us up to date on that topic of the twin, not-so-fast, single-tunnel project.
see, what's interesting, what's interesting is how exciting California news is, and it's similar to the national news. They have all these things going back and forth, and nobody, every day there's a different decision, and somebody comes up with different things, and we don't know what to believe until we have Chris on the show.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So, you know, they're waiting until, they're giving DWR time to respond to this motion. And then the people that are also joined on to get to respond to DWR's response. So we'll know next week, you know, if they're going to go forward. Yeah, they're really trying to get this done before Governor Brown leaves office. And, you know, we've been actually kind of lucky. We've had two governors that have taken on water as a major issue for them. Before, it was sort of like the third rail after the peripheral canal in 1982 failed. Most governors didn't bother to touch it. And I think it's going to be a problem if they don't get it approved by the time Governor Brown leaves office. The next governor coming in may or may not, you know, be supportive of this project. And if it falls apart, then I think it's going to go back to being the third rail. And, you know, whether or not the Delta tunnels are right for the Delta, I mean, if we're not going to build the tunnels, we still need to address the Delta. But my fear is that if it collapses, that the state will turn its back on the Delta. No politician's going to want to get involved.
Well, the water issues in California are not going to go away. You know, we are speculating that we might be entering a new drought period. And so there's got to be continued investment, I think, in water resources and management. And
well, this has been going on for more than 16 years from the two governors. And
well, and there's really it also impacts the Delta and the health of the Delta. So from that standpoint, it needs to be done, I think.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, I mean, what we will probably see in the wake will be a lot more regional projects, recycled water, et cetera. Whether that is going to be enough long term for Southern California, I don't know, can't answer that. I mean, we'll see too. Here comes the drought again. And, you know, when we cut back, you know, I don't know. You know, there's drought on the Colorado River too.
Yep.
So, you know, it's really kind of a tenuous situation.
It's the not the Wild West, it's the Dry West. But speaking of projects, has there been any new updates on the Prop 1 funding of the projects that were submitted?
The water storage project?
Yes. They were going to be graded, right? All of the projects that were submitted were going to be graded by a commission. And
they were all, they all got bad scores.
Right. And so does that mean they're not going to get funded, or they have to reapply, or do you know?
No, they have to provide more information in some cases to support their claims of benefit. ecosystem benefits. And I think with some, I think that there are some good projects in that bunch that actually do provide some good benefits and provide ecosystem benefits as well. I was surprised some of those, you know, fell so low in scores. But we'll see what happens in this next round. They'll be appealing those scores. I think they have until like the 23rd or something of this month to get their appeals in. And then, you know, they'll be heard by the commission and we'll see what happens. I would say there were some of those projects in the bunch that I think were pretty sketchy on the benefits. And one in particular that nobody spoke in support of, and like, you know, many people got up and said, that's a terrible project. You know, there's no water for it, rap, rap. So we'll be seeing how that all shakes out.
Well, I know the funds are still there, so it will be interesting to see if some of these rewrites will successfully convince the commission that there are ecosystem benefits.
Yeah, well, their hands are sort of tied. They have to sort of follow the formula that the legislature gave them. Although I do believe at the end they have discretion to change the scores. But, you know, in there lies the thing that I think the legislators were really trying to get around doing is, you know, they didn't want to have a group of people deciding solely, you know, based on whatever to approve these projects. They wanted some parameters put in. They wanted this project to compete. And then they laid out a pretty strict, you know, set of rules for that. So in a sense, you know, the commission's kind of dealing with what it has to. But we'll have to see what happens with these appeals. I would imagine some of these projects to go forward will probably do so.
But what happens if the committees still think they're too low? Then what?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, if the commission evaluating the projects.
And they think they're not up to snuff, what happens?
You know, I don't know. There's money there. I mean, the voters approved that money, and they approved it to be spent under those guidelines. If they don't spend it, it's not like they can spend it on something else.
I don't know. California's good at moving money around. I was just curious.
Well, But not money that voters approve. I mean, it's one thing if you have taxes for something, you know, but the voters approved a bond for a very specific purpose. And the governor and the legislature can't go on and subvert the will of the voters. I mean, I don't know what happens to that money, but I don't think they can just say, okay, high-speed rail.
That's my favorite.
would they open it up to resubmission in a future year, or is it a one-time deal? Like, this is your chance to submit your project applications?
Because the appeal process is only once, right?
Yeah, I think it's only once. And I think that, you know, that they got to figure out a way to do it now, because going back and trying to go through it all again, and it would take years and years. And we really do need to start addressing, you know, some of these issues that we have.
Well, do you hear any more discussion amongst water professionals about the drought? Are we still at the point where, well, we still have February and March and April, we might get some rain, some significant rain?
They're not counting on that.
it's looking pretty bad. I mean, I'm actually up in Sacramento this week, and the weather here is beautiful, devastatingly beautiful, you say. You know, it shouldn't be this nice.
Unlike Minnesota at -7. So.
Well, the reservoirs continue to be full, except for that one that
had for Oroville,
that's right. That's the name of it.
One that's getting sued again.
but I mean, with full reservoirs, we're not. I do believe, you know, my prediction is we'll probably see the return of some kind of water restrictions this year, because we don't want to be draining down the reservoirs and living life as normal. I think it's too risky.
I'm betting on June.
Well, something I think will get in April, but whether the governor declares another drought emergency, that's that. I don't know what if you were a betting person.
Oh, it would probably come on April 1st. That's like the big snow survey, the last one of the year. That was the one that, you know, a few years ago, Jerry Brown was standing in the dry brown field.
Yep, which was a very effective PR communication action. I mean, I think.
But on April Fool's Day?
Well, you know, yeah, when you see no snow
it was a stark picture, but you saw that. Yeah. Absolutely.
It was, actually. I mean, and on April 1st, there's just so much going on anyways, because, you know, there's always some funnies, you know, to be posted. Some people make jokes.
Absolutely.
And then there was the snow survey, and then I believe the drought executive order all on the same day.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
It was quite a big day.
So I wonder if Vegas might have yes, drought emergency declaration, no drought. And that would be a good bet. It'd
be interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it probably wouldn't make much on it. It's kind of obvious.
You're right.
You know, Colorado's having a low snow, you know, low snow on the Rockies too. I mean, there's some. The big concerns now for the Colorado River this spring.
You know, there's a elevation at which the states lose control of allocating the water resources from the Colorado River. I kind of want to think it's 1,075 feet of elevation.
Yeah, what that is there's a point at Hoover Dam where if the water level gets low enough, they can't run the hydroelectric generators anymore. There's not enough head on the water to push through. So, so that's a big concern. And then they declare shortages. And they've really worked hard, you know, the lower basin states and with Mexico even to come up with plans to address this so that, you know, because if you get down to that point in Lake Mead, then, you know, you're really in big trouble.
I think it's all of the cabinet, marijuana that's being grown, that they're sucking water out of the Colorado River illegally.
Well, you also got that they're polluting the stuff with their chemicals when they're growing that stuff. So that's another whole issue in California coming up. Hey, Chris, we're running up against the break, and we want to thank you for joining us today. Good news. Next time I want to talk about the nitric nitric oxide pollution that's happening.
Oh, in California. That's
in our water?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Whoa.
So that's something we'll talk about next week. Anyway, you have a great week in Sacramento. Enjoy it and come home, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back. A word from our sponsor. You're here on The Water Zone with Mike and Rob, so stay tuned.
This is the Schmitz Yard. Companies coming soon and, oh, Schmidt, their deck and outdoor furniture's been dominated by dirt. But no worries, there's plenty of time for Scott's Outdoor Cleaner plus OxyClean to work its magic. Its fast-foaming action lifts dirt and wipes out stains from moss, mold, mildew, and algae. Guaranteed. All while being safe to use around plants and grass. Because when company's coming, dirt's not invited. This is a Scott's Yard. Pick up Scott's Outdoor Cleaner this weekend.
Are you looking for a place to buy your landscape and gardening items? Come visit us at Site One Landscape Supply. We offer a large and quality selection of irrigation, landscape, and outdoor living products such as Toro's water-efficient precision nozzles. Site One Landscape Supply has over 30 locations right here in Southern California, and we are the largest national wholesale distributor of landscape supplies in the United States. Site One's knowledgeable and friendly staff is equipped to help you with all your landscape, irrigation, and outdoor living projects. Whether you're redoing your backyard into a drought-tolerant garden or creating a water-efficient landscape for your client, Site One has everything you need, including the latest in water-saving technologies, drought-tolerant plants for your yard, irrigation supplies, fertilizer and weed control products, landscape accessories, hardscape products, outdoor lighting, and much, much more. Visit SiteOne.com to find a store near you or stop by today. Site One, we are stronger together.
All right, welcome back to the second portion of the Water Zone with Mike and Rob. Hope everybody's having a great day. I know I am. I know Mike had a good day, so that's a good thing. We have a special guest going to come on next. His name is Jamie Gordy, and he's been active in the British Columbia commercial construction industry for the last 45 years. He's got involved with advances in building sciences, and that's allowed him for the inclusion of rainwater detention systems by Canadian National Building Codes. And since the years 2000, Gordy has participated in the installation of numerous rainwater detention systems, but he also does things not only in Canada, but all over the world. And we want, he's an interesting person that I got bumped into and got his name, and we're going to bring him on. Jamie, welcome to the Water Zone.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
How's the weather up in British Columbia?
Well, we've just gone through the month of January with about 250 millimeters of rainfall, and we just had our first sunny break today.
Ah.
So, going well.
Interesting, because I noticed that you really got going with this new water-saving approach, this technology, during the 2015 period, which we were having our California drought at the same time. And, you know, we're back into a drought mode, it seems, here in California. But you in British Columbia are fortunate enough to have sufficient rain. So congratulations on that.
Absolutely.
Well done.
Well, can you tell us a little about what you and I talked about the other day, about your aha moment about getting into what you're doing today?
Well, I've been involved in the construction industry, as you mentioned there, for a number of years. And part of the works and services that we did was, during the build-out over since the mid-1980s in Vancouver, we've seen a lot of high-rise construction. And, of course, with all that additional load on our storm sewer systems, we adopted a building science to put in rainwater detention systems, and then that would delay the water entering the storm sewer system and allow it to remain there until such a time as that it's released into the storm sewer system after the storm dissipates. In July of 2015, we had a appreciable dry weather spell between the 90 and 120 days. So that was unusual for Vancouver. We were levied with a stage 4 drought rating, and my aha moment was that the wastewater authority had to flush the sewer system. And the only water available at that time was from our drinking water reservoirs.
Oh, my gosh.
And I look back at the work that I'd done over the years, and I'm going like, but we have all this water in detention, or we should have all this water in detention. So I brought it to the attention of the authorities, and in the fall of 2015, they invited me to put a proposal in with the Vancouver Economic Commission, and our proposal was accepted.
So you're saying this entire storm drain system in Vancouver, which is designed to collect stormwater, take it away from this, you know, the urban area, they were going to have to flush it out, but they had to use drinking water, potable water, to do that.
Yeah, our storm sewers and our wastewater systems are combined. So when the systems are overflowing through heavy rainfall, it actually is discharged at 15 locations throughout the Vancouver area including into our beach areas. So with the detaining the water, it relieves that stress on the storm sewer and the wastewater system. So, but during the dry event, I theorize that what we can do is inventory these detention systems using the Internet of Things to monitor them and then access them during the dry spell.
That just boggles my mind in the sense that, these retention areas full of water, in order to get them where you want it, in other words, were you looking to use the water in the detention areas strictly for use to flush the storm drain system or the when it was necessary? Is that what the purpose of that water would be used for?
Actually, the purpose of the water could be multifold, but essentially the water can be tapped into from by the city for firefighting purposes, to prevent grass fires on boulevards as a backup water supply in the event that, you know, they have limited water being able to deliver to the residences that live in Vancouver. So it could be there as a Plan B water supply where the reservoirs can't deliver that water.
I just find that, and so would you have to install pumps at each detention area to be able to pull that water and move it to where you want it to go?
Well, yeah, the detention systems are generally on the private property, at civic addresses, and all the facilities with respect to pumps and level indicators is all already in place.
Oh, really?
What we theorized was is we simply monitor the weather patterns, and as we get into a drier environment, then we retain that water rather than detain the water, and then the city will have in its engineering office a dashboard that gives them a Google map with a pin drop and says at this particular residential address or city-owned building, we have this much water in inventory. And so that would help us bridge the gap between the dry seasons and our wet seasons here.
So what you were proposing was basically, could I say it's a software solution to managing existing water supplies within the retention ponds?
Correct. It's a combination of we have the infrastructure with the detention systems already in place, and it's part of our building code. In addition to that, we simply add IoT technology to that and connect that to the engineering department in the city, and they will have at their fingertips access to an inventory of water throughout the Vancouver population area. And our population is roughly in around the neighborhood of about 4 million people. So we have a significant amount of these detention systems, and we have a significant amount of water that's basically sitting in inventory that can be monitored and then tapped into when required.
I got to ask you, how did you feel when this idea popped into your head? I mean, was there something that stimulated the thought? I mean, I know you talked about, you read that potable water was going to basically be flushed down the drain for a particular purpose, but it seems so logical, and yet no one had ever thought about it until you did.
Well, it wasn't common knowledge amongst the population of the city that it came to me through other resources, and it upset me to the point where when the city put out a request for proposals called a Green and Digital Demonstration Program, which gives us access to city resources. So I put in, well, we're green because we're harvesting water. We look digital with the Internet of Things. So I said, why not? We filed our application with the city, and we were actually in the top 1% of projects that were chosen by the city of Vancouver.
Oh, that what a success story. Wow. I mean, that's just amazing. Now, what can you share a little history in terms of what drove the city of Vancouver to put, and maybe you mentioned this before, to put the requirement into the building code to have these detention areas for storm runoff?
This initiative was actually part of our Canadian national building code. So it's not unique. It's not unique to Vancouver. This is something that is rolled out nationally. All our building codes are federal in nature. So this is not unusual. We've been building these systems since about the year 2000, and I just surmise that if we have the infrastructure in place already. And with the advent of the Internet of Things and wireless sensors and modems and such, then we can simply have our finger on the pulse of what's available and where.
That's pretty slick.
It really is amazing. And so, have you had the opportunity with the funding then to actually prototype that combination of?
Well, they also won a thing called a Brew Award.
B as in like
beer,
what you drink.
But that's what people thought, but it wasn't. You want to? I can explain it, but why don't you go ahead and Jamie, tell us what the Brew Award and how you got involved with that?
Well, the Brew Award, actually, our project was chosen by the Vancouver Economic Commission, it eventually ended up on the World Wide Web. And then the Global Water Center out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that has the Brew Program.
And that's Mary Eggert's part of the business.
Well, I met Mary Eggert through the Global Water Center, and both Mary and I are members of that association.
Okay.
So essentially, they encouraged us to put in a application of our technology. So I basically cut and paste my Vancouver Economic Commission's proposal to the Brew, and eventually we won a seat at the table under their entrepreneurship program.
Yeah, and that also was competitive, and they supposedly have about 20 water technology startups to date. And to be able to join that group, do they fund a project that must be done in the U.S. or in their city, or can it be anywhere in the world?
Well, our participation was in Milwaukee itself at the Water Center, and the Brew Program essentially provided funding to ourselves as a Brew winner, and they also gave us an opportunity to obtain space in the building, and then we had full access to all the advice and all the other entrepreneurs that were successful winners as well too. And we spent a good part of a year in Milwaukee with the organization.
Wow! So you basically moved from Vancouver to Milwaukee for a year.
I lived out of a suitcase for a year. Yes, that's right.
Hey, there's a. You know, you're one of those leaders that are willing to sacrifice in order to make advances in water technology. So
that's very commendable.
Yeah, I mean that, what you've come up with, just it really shows what can be done with existing resources. That's what I'm sure that in the year 2000, the building code folks did not envision what you actually have put together, or do you think they did?
Well, it was more from a stormwater management aspect, that rather than predicting future droughts, it's because back in the 2000, that drought wasn't even on the lips of most of the people here. And the drought that Vancouver experienced in the summer of 2015 was an anomaly. We've never had a drought. In Vancouver, we're fondly referred to as the wet coast.
That's good. So, that's good.
So I was very fortunate to be accepted through the Brew Program in Milwaukee. And so with that, we've been able to develop our hardware software configurations. And again, with that in mind, is through my office, a fellow Wisconsin knight who moved actually to Cape Town, South Africa, he married a young lady there, brought to our attention the drought crisis that they're experiencing here over the last 3 years in Cape Town, South Africa. So through our office here in Vancouver and also our office in Milwaukee, we've been very active participants in bringing our technology forward to Cape Town.
Really? You mean, so do they have an infrastructure of detention areas for water, or is that something that they could actually construct for the future?
Yeah, they don't, and this is what we've come to appreciate, and I was brought this to my attention back in the June of 2017, and so we brought our technology and our knowledge of how to construct these systems, how to connect them to the Internet of Things, and then our understanding of freshwater sciences. They have no water left in their five reservoirs that's in the Cape Town proper area, and so now they're having to rely upon groundwater, well water, borehole water, and spring water, and of course these waters are not in a condition that you can drink today. So we're designing equipment and systems in order to bring that water up to drinking water standards.
Wow.
And that's through a non-chemical process, correct?
Yeah. We can hold large quantities of water in inventory, monitor the condition of the water electronically, and then if the water turns with any bacteria entering the system or such, we can identify the bacteria. We can now presently also identify bacteria by species, turn on our electronic device, and disinfect that water that's being held in inventory. That information then can be uploaded into the database, and we can get condition reports on a daily basis as to the condition of the water. So you can feel comfortable tapping into that water reserve 24/7.
And are you saying that by identifying the bacteria that you then customize the treatment for that bacteria?
That is correct, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's made possible again because of the access to databases about bacteria, or what's commonly found.
I'm presently working with a local university that has developed a bacteria sensor that can identify bacteria by species. It's not a commercial product yet. We are working with them with our electronic disinfection technology in order to bring that product to the commercial market, and it will be launched in the not too distant future.
So we can
do water analysis on any type of source water, and then identify the presence of that bacteria, if any, and then treat that water in situ, and then release that water for public consumption.
How long does the process take to do that? Well, let me back that up. The retention chambers for this, how large are they?
They can anywhere be conservative size, say, 750 gallons all the way up to 40,000-50,000 gallons.
Wow.
So there's no limit to the retention other than just physical space.
Okay. And then so the treatment of this depends on quantity and time, I would assume, right?
The treatment technology is scalable. So we can treat all the way up from a single glass of water all the way up to an Olympic swimming pool storage size of water. And so it's fully scalable. What it allows us to do as well then is we close the loop on water use. So we can take a fixed volume of water, and then it's used by occupants of the building. It's recycled back into a holding and treatment system, brought back into potable water quality, and then once again held in inventory and recycled to the building. So we don't need to refresh or retop off that water except for some minor appreciable losses.
So in Cape Town, for example, with the underground aquifers and the boring they do, they can bring the water up, put it to a retention tank, purify it, and put it back into the system?
Correct, yeah. Yeah. So what we're doing is we're not replacing the water. If the reservoirs were full today, we wouldn't be having this conversation. What Cape Town's experiencing right now is what we refer to as a water gap, which is not dissimilar to an electrical brownout when you experience a power loss. So we're actually bridging that period of time where the city cannot deliver you water, and having you self-sufficient on with your own closed loop water system.
Hmm. Wow. So I want to back up. It sounds like there hasn't ever been a technology that could identify a bacteria through electronic means, through a sensor. Is that something that's unique to what you and your company are developing?
That was part of the work that we conducted with the funds that were invested with us underneath the BREW program. That is correct. And then we've invested additional funding back in where I live in Vancouver, along with the local university, and we're bringing that product along, and that will be the next generation.
So, if I understand your history correctly, you've gone from being in the construction business in Vancouver to now exclusively water-related technologies?
It consumes a great deal of my time. You would be correct.
But you're still doing construction in somewhat form.
It's all part of the solution. Yes.
What with your work and interaction with folks from Cape Town, can you share any insights or comments that you've heard about the seriousness of the water gap in Cape Town?
And you have a person there on the ground currently. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have a Wisconsin born and raised expat now living full time in Cape Town. He married a young lady there and is making his home there now. So we're constantly on Skype calls daily, working towards getting our solution in place. They have just announced today that that what they refer to as day zero, which is when your taps will be turned off, and that will be early around the 11th of May, 2018.
Wow.
So we're working with a number of commercial and financial companies that understand that if you can't provide a safe work environment for your employees, supplying them sufficient water and washrooms, that under employment law, you have to send your employees home. So it's in their best interest to keep their businesses open, keep the people gainfully employed, and of course, and that's done by solving the drought crisis.
Well, here on the Water Zone, we've always emphasized that water plays a very, very essential role in our lives. It affects our economy, it affects our agriculture, our ability to grow food, affects the environment.
Health.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it's something like you just can't send money to help Cape Town, although maybe there are some organizations that would take donations because of the drought there.
Now they're down to how many gallons per day are they allowed now? I know what it was a couple weeks ago, but I don't know if it's changed.
Yeah, and so because they're in metric measurement, I can speak in those terms. Right now, they're limiting the population as of February the 1st to 50 liters of water consumption per person per day.
Yeah, that's about
that it. That will be then dropped down to, in May, down to 25 liters of water per person per day. The downside of that is that they have 200 distribution sites in local athletic fields and such that you actually have to physically take your 25-liter container down to the site and queue up with the rest of the folks there to get your daily allotment. And then, of course, take your water back home. The concern we have is that those folks that aren't physically capable of carrying that water, walking that distance, or are considered seniors or shut-ins, there's going to be a gap there and getting water to those folks.
Wow. Well, in gallons, you know, we're talking about around 12 gallons per person per day, and that dropping down, when it drops down to 25 liters, that's about 6 gallons per person per day. And in California, the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance, with the State of California Department of Water Resources has indicated, is that water agencies use the amount of 55 gallons per person per day as a way to calculate the water budget that would be allocated to a home. But a home of four, then, you know, times four times 55 is 220 gallons for the home. So when you go down to 6 gallons versus, you know, 55, huge.
What is the government doing about people, like you said, like shut-ins or elderly who can't schlep big tanks down to go fill up with water? What do they have a responsibility to do something? I mean, I can't believe they would just say, well, you have to go get it yourself or have somebody get it for you. I mean, are they going to offer to help? Or
I haven't seen anything that's been issued by the government in the public domain. We've recognized this as an issue. We are looking at the possibility of doing micro distribution points, neighborhood by neighborhood, and then working with church groups and such, companies such as rideshare companies that they already have the infrastructure in with respect to online ordering a rideshare. Well, rather than picking up a customer, they pick up a quantity of water and deliver it to the shut-in. Yeah. We're in conversation with the rideshare companies that are in business in Cape Town as we speak.
You know, I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl at all, if that's of interest to you, but they had a commercial with Budweiser, and they were showing when we had the hurricanes that they stopped the production of beer, and changed the can labeling and made it all water. And they donated, they brought it out to the people needing. I would hope somebody in that area of Cape Town, a company who does sort of something like that, would do something. Because, I mean, the whole place around Cape Town, I mean, the whole country isn't totally dry, correct?
Well, all of Cape Town, yes, is totally dry. The Western Cape is totally dry. To answer your question, yes, the local brewery, which is called... local Cape Town brewery has gone from bottling beer to bottling water in 1 liter bottles, and then that's distributed freely to local grocery stores and 7-Eleven type stores. They ask a little minor deposit so they get the plastic bottles back, and then they would refill those again and get them back into distribution.
That's good.
I just unless you're going through that kind of severe situation, it's hard to imagine all the aspects of life that get impacted by the lack of water. But the fact that you mentioned that 0 day or 0 hours now in May, I'd heard earlier that they were looking sometime in April, so maybe there has been a dramatic shift in terms of personal consumption of water, and everybody's pitching in to really save every drop that they possibly can.
I mean,
well, they pushed the goalposts forward about 2 weeks.
Is this got to be a big health issue coming down?
That is now the health department now is issuing their concerns to the general population. They're moving into their peak season for cholera season and bacteria, diarrhea, and such. And they're trying to encourage people to continue to hand wash and water wash their fruits and vegetables. But it's going to be different. It's going to be difficult with 6 gallons of water per
day.
Yes. But we can also have a residential model of our closed loop water technology that they can hold water in reserve, keep it in inventory for themselves, several gallons, and then loop that water in through all their personal needs, and so there won't be a need to for the city then to provide them water during this period of crisis.
So, do you see that system supplying a neighborhood, or do you see it more home by home, where it's a miniaturized version that basically is self-contained on the property?
The system is scalable, so it can go from a single-family dwelling all the way up to multi-tenancy construction or very large employers that have something in the neighborhood of between 7,000 to 9,000 employees within a business block. We're working with a real estate company that has large shopping mall holdings. They have about 40,000 people a day pass through their shopping malls. They've got all well-known North American-based franchise companies that are in these shopping malls. They're also subject to the water restrictions, and if they can't provide water to these businesses, then they're going to have to shutter their doors. And when they do that, they're not going to be paying franchise fees back to head office.
Yep. Is there anything based on your knowledge of the situation there at Cape Town that you might suggest to our listeners and to Rob and myself that we could do as individuals to help somehow?
We're looking at putting together our program very much like a GoFundMe program.
Mm-hmm.
The rideshare companies, we're looking at them saying, you know, for every rideshare, you donate a dollar to help alleviate this water crisis in Cape Town. For every hamburger or bucket of chicken that's sold, you donate a dollar towards to help alleviate the water crisis in Cape Town. We're working with charitable organizations as well, too.
How about the United Nations? Are they involved with anything?
We haven't heard the United Nations speak up yet.
Yeah, by the time they get it into committee and decide what to do, you know, it'll be too late.
No, I mean that's really scary thinking about getting down to 25 liters per day, and that includes flushing toilets and
washing clothes
and drinking. I mean, people need water to live. I mean, that's just really scary.
So what we're looking at here is the work that we're doing with Cape Town is Cape Town's actually going to be the poster child for California and Arizona.
That's an interesting perspective.
Do you know the population, just to know off the top of your head what it is?
At Cape Town?
Yeah.
It's just between 3.7 to 4 million people.
Wow. But please continue your thoughts on Cape Town being a poster child for perhaps the future in California and Arizona. Share with us your thoughts on that.
Well, what we're looking at is using technology to bridge this water gap, but we're also encouraging people in the construction industry that speak my language is that we're talking to them about capitalizing water as a budget item in their construction costs. So not unlike the installation of backup generators in the event that you have a brownout of power, but now what you're experiencing is a brownout of water. And so you've always relied upon the city to provide pressurized water to the site, and then you can do your connection between your building and the city. But that the city is no longer able to deliver you that water, so you now need to be independent and off the grid. And it could be a temporary thing, or it could be a long-term thing over the next number of years.
Wow. Well, if our listeners want to get more information about what your company is doing, do you have a website, or can you direct our listeners to someplace?
Yeah, I can provide. We're just putting the contacts the GoFundMe site together with Mary Eggert of the Global Waterworks.
Okay.
I understand Mary will be on next week with you folks.
Yes, she will be.
So, yeah, at that time we will have that initiative in place.
Well, my hat is off to you. Very Absolutely. Amazing progress that has been made in a short period of time. And implementing your ideas in a way that makes a difference. I mean, a lot of us think about, oh, we could do this, we could do that. But here you took an idea based on your understanding of the situation and the availability of an existing infrastructure and move forward with Internet of Things, sensors. You know, you're making something so significant happen. So
the light bulb was certainly lit.
Yeah, more like a flood lamp.
Yeah.
one of those Batman
searchlight.
Searchlight, right? Yeah, the searchlight went off, it's really grateful that you and Rob made contact and that you allocated some time to come share your thoughts and your examples for us to listen to. So that's really great.
And we'll certainly give out your website information when Mary's on the show and pass that on to our listeners. Because that's, like I said, this is an unbelievable critical situation. And
what it means for the future in other dry areas, you know, the fact that if we can prepare, I mean, the first question I had was, hey, what about in California? Why don't we have retention areas, you know, that we can call upon
right.
the way Vancouver does? So somebody was thinking ahead, that's for sure, in Canada. You guys are always pretty cool.
Yeah, and your sensor system, I think, would be of interest to every major water agency that I know.
Absolutely.
So, again, Jamie, thank you very, very much for agreeing to be on the show. We really appreciate it. I will get back to you to talk and continue other things with you as we go down the road. And hope our listeners had an interesting hour with us with this. So thank you again, Jamie.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Keep up the great work.
And remember, everybody, have a good week. Think about Cape Town, and that could be you. And most importantly, think blue, because
on Spaceship Earth, we are all crew. Start digging that return.